Good evening and welcome to Results Matter Radio. I am Erin Mazaros, Chief Marketing Officer and Director of Client Service for the law firm of Byrne Foreman, and I'll be your host for today's segment along with my co-host Lee Cantor. Lee is the CEO of Atlanta Business Radio X. If you are new to Results Matter Radio, welcome to our show. The show was developed to bring you pertinent information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Before we jump into today's show, which is part four of a four-part series on closely held businesses, let me welcome my co-host, Lee Cantor.
Great to see you again, Erin. How you been?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing great. Yeah. How are you enjoying the weather here?
I am.
A little chilly?
It is a little chilly, but I tell you, being from Indiana, I'm missing the snow. So, yeah, my friend said it's starting to snow there. Yeah, I bet you're
global,
not missing the
global
snow, are
warming.
You?
Yeah. I'm from Miami. I like it hot. Every day, 80 degrees. That works for me.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, Lee, we've got a great show today. So I'd like to introduce our guest speakers and go ahead and get started. I'm very excited about the topic today, which is actually part four of our series about closely held businesses. Previously, we covered restructuring your business, how to attract and or retain the right management team for your business. We had a lively discussion on being the one who is chosen to run the family's business. And then today's session is going to close out our series with our final topic of once you've decided it's time to sell your business, what do you need to do to be prepared and have a successful sale? Our guest speakers today on this topic have come highly recommended, so I'm confident that you will learn a few things, Lee, since you are kind of a closely held business.
Yes, I've got my notepad at the ready.
Yes, we have. Joining us for our discussion today is Alan McClure with Breckenridge Investment Bankers and Ed Brown with Byrne Foreman. Alan has over 30 years of experience advising management teams and shareholders of middle market businesses in connection with the sale of their businesses, as well as assignments relating to acquisitions and capital raises. Ed Brown is a partner in the Atlanta office of Byrne Foreman. Ed provides a variety of corporate services to the firm's clients, but for today's purposes, he is going to focus on representing family and privately held growth and mid-sized businesses and investors in the Southeast. Thank you again, gentlemen, for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Great.
Lee, how are you doing?
Great.
Good. Thanks. Ed, how about you?
It's great to be here. Excited about talking about a very interesting topic today.
Good. Well, we'd like to go ahead and get everything started. So, Alan, I'm going to ask you a loaded question. You've been advising people for a long time on aspects around closely held businesses. So with this in mind, and I'm sure you have the magic formula, when is the best time to sell your business?
That is a loaded question, Erin. It's very interesting. It's one that we talk often with clients and potential clients about. And the quick answer is there is no magic bullet that tells you, ding, it's time to sell your business. There are, however, a number of factors that influence our clients and potential clients in making that decision. And some of them include the performance of the company. Obviously, most people like to consider selling their business when the company's performing well. The health of the merger and acquisition market. I think everyone knows the past couple of years, the merger and acquisition market, along with the general economy, has been down, but it's beginning to pick up, fortunately. And then maybe third, there's generally a confluence of a number of personal circumstances may come into play. The health or wealth of family members that are running the business, the need or desire for wealth diversification, retirement objectives. One of the things that we're finding more and more interesting is everyone knows the first baby boomers are in the early 60s, and most people look to retire in their mid to late 60s. So we are meeting with a number of family-run businesses in which the founder of the business is reaching retirement age.
Now, do you see that retirement age has changed? Are people looking at more 70 to 75 to retire?
I think you're right, exactly. I know I personally have pushed off my retirement plans 10 years with what's happened in the past few years. But that is true, but many times, and one thing that people don't, they need to appreciate is you just don't decide to sell your business and go put it on eBay and sell your business. It's not an immediate transaction like you would if you bought or sold shares with your broker. It's a process that many times can take years to prepare for and to get ready. So many of our clients and potential clients are in their early to mid-60s, and they're making the decision of, I know I need to sell my business in the next 2 to 3 years. How do I prepare my business for a transition?
Okay.
Because many times these family-run businesses, the president or the founder of the business has incredibly key relationships with key vendors, with key customers, key people within the organization, and transferring all of that knowledge as well as the wealth of the business itself to a new owner is not an easy process. You just cannot go get a book on it. You can't necessarily transact immediately that process.
Okay.
And so that's why you need to check a number of factors, take time with your advisors to work through a plan. And so I wish I had the magic formula. I don't.
All right. Well, it sounds
the magic
like
formula is there is no formula.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like there are several factors. Ed, you know, have you seen that as well? And
no question. I think most of the clients come in, and it's a process. Alan sees them sometimes more towards the end of the process, although often they get involved early on. I think as the attorneys, the accountants, the financial planners that know these families, deal with them over the years, you see the process. You see as the first generation is starting to think about what they're going to do with the business. And there's no question, planning ahead is by far the most important thing they can do. Keep their eyes open, think about it, and understand any of these plans to work well. The longer you have to prepare, the longer you have to put the pieces of the business in order to make it sellable, to make it also work financially for you, the longer that period of time that you have to plan, so much the better.
So you might even advise people, you know, don't look at it 2 or 3 years when you're nearing, you know, in your mid-60s or early 60s, but look at it when you're in your 50s. Just look at, you know,
absolutely,
what kind of process should I put together? Well, when you look at all those factors that you guys mentioned, if we could just take one today, which one would you think was the one that we should focus on? What is the most valuable?
Well, I think you hit the word you just used is probably the right word. Most people, the key number they come back to is what is the value? And if you look at it from a simplistic point of view, a business owner owns a business, earns a living out of that business, and has a particular lifestyle that goes along with it. If he is going to consider selling that business, he is going to trade that business in exchange for another asset of some nature. Hopefully it's all cash that he can put in the bank and just draw interest on and live off of it. But it's going to be a change in his life. He needs to be prepared to know he's going to forego that business, which he's earned a living, in exchange for something else. And maybe it's a continuing role in the business in which the majority of the ownership is transferred hands and he's got a pile of cash. Maybe it's a note. Maybe it's some other kind of instrument that he's got. But he's got to think fundamentally, is it the right value? So if you were to boil all of the factors, and there are a number of factors that influence the decision, value, it's got to be the right value, and that would be to satisfy a number of needs. So it's if I choose one, that would be it.
Okay, and what steps do we take then to make sure that we create the right value or to be successful in our sale of what we, you know, Lee, you may have been thinking about this, you know, I know
I'm always thinking of this.
Well, you're very young though. You're probably not close to that retirement age.
But I'd be curious to know, how do you manage the expectation of the owner? Because in their mind, they might think that the company is at X value, but in reality, it may be a Y value.
I'll say this. I've never met a client or potential client in which they agreed with our value of their business. They always think it's worth more than it really is.
Right.
And so that is part of the process. And when we get involved typically with a group of advisors, the accountants, the lawyers that are advising the business on a day-to-day basis, one of the things we look through is to try to look at a business from a third party's perspective, to look at it from the standpoint of a potential buyer. Many times our clients say, wow, I didn't realize that 50% of my revenue is with one customer, and that's a very scary thing. I didn't realize that I needed to have audited financial statements as opposed to compiled financial statements. I didn't realize
that. Now, do most people know the difference between that, since we've mentioned the
you know,
audited
most,
and compiled?
Most, quite frankly, probably, yeah, they do, but do they appreciate it? And are there other ways to get around it? You know, can you do other procedures? Absolutely. But when we go through a process and sell the business, it typically takes anywhere from 6 to 8 months start to finish. In that period of time, there's always an aha moment in which our client will come to us and say, wow, I did not realize that this is the way others would look at my business. Because, you know, it's just natural. Business owners run their business day to day. They sell their product day to day.
They're focused on operations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They sell their business maybe one time in their life. And that's a big difference, you know. And so it's something to think through as you're going through that process. There is no magic particular bullet. It is a process. It's not a just immediate transaction. In today's world, everybody's immediately gratified, whether they turn on their iPhone or whatever. it's something that you've got to think through. You've got to work through with your advisor to get done.
Well, I think one other thing important for a lot of the small businesses to be aware of, and I see that family businesses a lot looking at it over time. And the question is sometimes, what's the value of the business? Sometimes a more important question, I see this all the time, is what is it that you plan on doing with the proceeds of the sale of the business? If you want to retire and you find somebody that says, oh, yes, I want to have three houses around the world and I want to have a private jet and all these things are great, and you say, well, the business is worth $2 million, it's probably not a very good plan, and they're 42 years old. It's part of this process of I try to push them as well as trying to talk to somebody like Alan and getting people in there to help them understand what the business is worth is what are their needs? What are they going to do after they sell the business?
Right. Now, do you have an example maybe you can share about when you've had that kind of a discussion with somebody?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that happens on a fairly regular basis where they come in, and particularly you'll find folks that if they're in their 40s, in their early age, they really want to sell their business. The question is, okay, are you going to go back out and start another business? What are you going to do after that? I think in the last several years, it's become for those early baby boomers, those people in their late 50s and early 60s, it has become a very real question to them because their other assets have gone down in value.
Right.
And for a lot of these people in small business, their primary asset, a lot of these folks don't have large retirement accounts. What they have is a family business that has a substantial amount of value. So, you know, this ability to go in, and I'll have folks all the time, and you'll put them with a financial planner sometimes before they even go through this process. What are your needs? What are you going to have? And then what do you do with your business, your primary asset? What are you going to do with it over the next couple of years? I had somebody that came in and did that and really came to the conclusion that what they needed to do was expand. And rather than sell,
you may get the other end of the spectrum where
it wasn't worth enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they had 5 years. They were willing to put a plan together, and they actually went out and acquired a couple of other similar businesses in order to grow.
In order to achieve their ultimate goal.
Exactly.
But that's the key, though, isn't it, to kind of really keep your eye on the ball of what you're trying to accomplish in the long run.
Exactly.
So that comes into the advisement piece of it, and regardless of whether you're the accountant or the lawyer or whomever, but helping them see, you know, what is it that they want to do throughout the entire process to help determine.
It is. Someone coined the phrase seller's paradox, and here's the seller's paradox that Ed was talking about. Excuse me. I'm making X dollars a year out of my family-owned business. If I'm going to sell that, I need to get an amount of money that I pay my taxes on the sale of the business and put in trust company bank and earn whatever interest tax-free or whatever.
It hasn't been trust company bank in about 20 years.
Sorry, showing my age. Whatever, SunTrust, you could. But the issue is money in a bank account drawing interest is risk-free. Money you earn out of your business every year is extremely risky, and you've got to risk adjust that. So if I'm earning X dollars a year out of my business, I run the risk that the business next year may go out of business, and I make nothing. And that you've got to risk adjust to an amount of money that you put in the bank and get interest on, which is risk-free. Well, until the last couple of years, probably risk-free, depending upon the bank you put it in. But at the same time, that's the issue, is that many times we're spending times with clients in which they're saying, I'm going to make X dollars year in, year out for the rest of my life. I'm not going to sell my company for that. I'm working on a situation right now with a business in Dallas, Texas, in which the purchase price is a fair purchase price that the leading industry buyer is going to pay for them. And my client last night said, I'm not going to sell for that number. I can earn that in 4 years. And I had to say, you know what? You could be out of business in 4 years, and you're not going to earn that. So you got to weigh the odds. And, you know, Lee, the other thing is interesting. We also tell people don't try to time the market. Right now, everyone thinks the capital gains are going to go up next year. They probably are going to go up next year. We're advising clients do the right deal with the right partner in the right time and not try to game the system to hit the window.
And, are you finding more and more like want to get a sale done this year?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, clearly, if you're not, here we are. You know,
you wouldn't advise them, though. You would prohibit, or not prohibit,
well,
but you would do your best to
We actually have two assignments of the ones we're working on right now. We started in the summer. The hope was if it moved quick enough with the right partner, we'd get it done by year end. Last week, we sat down with our clients. We said, it's not going to happen year end. Do you want to suspend the process? Both of them said, no, we want to continue. We like the partners that we're talking to. And if we close first quarter next year, it's the right transaction. So what do we pay more in taxes?
Right. That's good counsel, though. That's not
We started the process that way. We started by saying, okay, guys, we will try, but there's no guarantee what's going to happen by this particular period.
Right. I have one right now that's going through the – she's doing the same thing as a woman that owns a very, very profitable business. But she's looking at it and thinking about trying to sell this year to somebody that's really not the good buyer for her, and she knows it. And I think she's finally come to the conclusion that, no, just saving a few points on capital gains is not worth a deal that she really doesn't think it fits for her culturally, for her company, and she's put it off, decided to go to next year.
You know, I think it's important to tell our listeners, too, that all of the scenarios that you mentioned and all of the things that you've talked about with different buyers and people that you come in contact with who are dealing with these types of situations, you guys are educated about all these things, but I fear that as they listen to this, they won't come talk to you because they aren't educated about it. And I think it's more majority of the people aren't.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason that they need to talk with someone, you know, that they can trust.
Right. Is that one of your frustrations in your job is that you have this counsel, you've seen, so like this is what you do every day where this isn't what they do every day. And then they might have a little bit of knowledge and you're kind of having to kind of re-educate them?
Well, I think it's probably a little different for Alan than it is for myself, because most of these people I represent on an ongoing basis.
Right, so you see them. Right.
So it is more of a process. It is very often very difficult for me. I will talk to them and say, well, I really think you need to go talk to an Alan or somebody that really deals in buying and selling businesses and get some good advice. It is very often very difficult to get them to do that.
Reason for saying no to that?
Their fear in getting involved in conversation with us is that there's this fear, the word investment banker, which is what my business card says, means that I'm going to come and rape and pillage and steal from you. And it is not the case at all.
In their mind, what are they thinking is going to happen?
Well, they're thinking investment bankers and barbarians at the gate and those kind of pictures of I don't want to talk to the investment banker because it immediately sends a signal that I'm going to sell my business.
Right. Or he's going to look for how he can get part of this business.
Take advantage of it.
Yep.
And the biggest struggle we have as a firm is getting in front of people, and we don't charge for this, to do exactly this kind of conversation. What do you want to accomplish? To educate them. And we do that for free. What are you looking to accomplish? Did you know that you've got revenue concentration? Did you know you've got a weakness in the sales department? Did you know that a buyer is going to look at your plant and say, this is an EPA disaster? You know, things like that are issues that can be addressed over a number of years if you're looking at doing it. And so the biggest struggle we have is getting in front of these people.
But that's a conversation that's a no-charge conversation?
Absolutely, from our standpoint, because the better educated a client is before we move in,
right,
the better off we are. And we'll go through.
Better off everybody is.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, in Ed's practice, he is advising business on a number of fronts. He may be drafting contracts. He may be, drafting employment contracts or any other kind of element as well. There is an ongoing relationship. We are brought in to complete a specific transaction. And because of that, it's in our best advantage to get in front of these people and say, here's what you should expect. Here are the weaknesses of your business. Here are the strengths of your businesses. Here are the likely people that are going to express interest in your business. Here's the likely valuation you're going to receive. Now, back to your original point, Lee, rarely do we come back and say, we think your company's worth X. Will the client say, wow, that's more than I thought it's worth? Usually it's, isn't it worth X plus 20%? I said, well, because this is reality, you know. And so it's
when you're presenting them, when you're presenting them that value, how is that presented to them? Like, what's that information based upon?
It's a number of various valuation techniques. I mean, there is a quantitative element to that, that is influenced by qualitative elements of the time into the market, the amount of leverage in the market, a number of factors like that. But generally, we have four different specific valuation techniques that we walk the client through that are based upon, you know, just the performance, historical and forecasted of the business, as well as other transactions in the business, and or if there's some public comparables that you can use as a proxy for value. Uh-huh. And generally, we're correct in the process. And the concept and what we do is we take and we like to tell clients and potential clients, our job is to understand your business enough to present the proper story in front of the proper buyer universe to drive the best value. We never go to market and say, here's a company that is available for sale, and here's the price. We don't put a price tag on it. We let the market develop the price.
Right.
But we have to communicate that story. And so we spend a lot of time up front understanding the business, and there's as many qualitative factors as there are quantitative factors that dial into valuation before we go to market.
Do you have can you share maybe a story about, you know, one of your big successes?
And or I actually, one of the stories that I think you've told me is about having to go in front of an entire group of how many employees
because
they were worried. The management was worried about telling
usually them. And I'm dominating conversation, they'd jump in, but you know, the what we do generally is highly confidential and is maintained throughout the process as best as possible. We generally do not advise clients to disclose they're considering selling their business to their employees until the very end, because a deal can fall apart for 100 different reasons, and to get one to close is very, very tough and takes a long time. So when you embark on the process, rarely are we advising clients to tell tell the whole employee base. And 2 years ago, I sold a business here in Atlanta to a large food company. Has 87 employees, 20 of which are third-generation employees in the business. So grandmother, grandfather, and grandchildren have been working in this business. The owner, 78 years old. The wife says, I thought we were going to buy that place at the beach. Why have we not bought the place at the beach? You're spending too much time, and you're never going to enjoy your retirement. And we sold the business. But before we got started, the client made me stand in front of the entire employee base and explain what we're doing. And at the time, there was no guarantee we were going to get a deal done. Fortunately, we sold it in a wonderful transaction to a great business who retained all the employees, maintained all the benefits and stuff. But I had to stand up and field a ton of questions. What does this mean? Do I have my job? Do I not have my job? What's going to happen to my 401k? What's going to happen to this? Who is going to buy the business? A lot of questions I couldn't answer at the time, but it was a very interesting process. But that's usual. That's an unusual circumstance here.
But I think it shows that how you work with the people that come to you, regardless of what's on your books, is how you go through the process. You know, if it's something they need for that closely held business to keep the retention of their employees and keep the business strong, and they feel strongly about you.
Absolutely.
You know, I hate to coin it this way, but being human.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. While quantitative measures is a lot of what investment bankers do, I tell my children qualitative matters, the issues that relate to the culture of the business, the employees, all of those issues are so important. We tell people many times, why would buyer X pay all of this money for your company if all they're going to do is completely tear it apart? Makes no sense at all.
You know, particularly with family businesses, there is, and this is, I think, one of the reasons, get back to Lee's earlier question about why is it tough to get them sometimes to sit down and talk about it, is there is this family issue. It is a very close group. It is very an emotional group. Sitting down and talking to a banker or somebody about selling their business is something that's very counterintuitive to them. They really don't want to sell the business. It is their family. That's what they talk about at Thanksgiving. It's what they do over the holiday.
Right. It's their identity.
It's an identity. And selling that identity is a very, very difficult thing to do. And that's why it certainly takes most of these businesses years to go through the entire process, not only determining what type, you know, do we have a next generation that's going to take over, or certain children that are going to take over? Do we have employees that might want to take over? Do we have to find a third-party buyer to take over? All those things are take a long time to do, and particularly with family-held businesses and even some closely held businesses where the partners have been together for 30 years. I mean, I have one right now that, you know, two gentlemen, and they're both in their mid-60s right now. One's almost 70. They've had this business for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Well, they're like the old husband and wife. I mean,
right.
They bicker, they chit-chat, they argue. But it's very difficult for them, and we now have a situation where one is – says, I would like to sell. I think it's time. And the other one, I don't want to. And it's times like this where you get people like Alan involved and try to come up with alternatives for them and to help them through that process.
That's generally a formula for a transaction, too, is if you get partners that are on different pages.
Disagreement, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you find that some closely held or family businesses care more about the culture of the buyer than they do about maybe the getting the last dollar?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. And we advise clients all the time on that. I mean, there many times we'll bring multiple buyers to the table, and the client will not choose the one with the highest value.
There's one in particular, and this is probably, more years than I want to think about, but actually Alan's firm was involved with the sale as well, and I was representing the seller. It was a family business, and they sold, and the buyer was a fairly large fund that came in and bought up the business, very institutional, very corporate, and part of the deal was that my client was given an employment contract, a consulting agreement, to stay around. Well, it was really done in matter of trying to get him some money and to do some things. They really never had any intent of him doing any work. Mm. Well, I tried to explain that to him before, that just because you have this agreement, don't expect them to, you know, save the big corner office for you.
Right.
And it literally, I think, over the next couple of years, he really questioned whether he did the right thing because the culture wasn't there. He went in to help, and they didn't want his help. They had their ways of running their business, and they were going to do that. And that's where you get back to that finding the right fit. It was the most money. And right. In the long run, he got over it. But it spent several years of an awful lot of phone calls I would get about, well, you know, I went out and told them to do this and that, and they won't do it. I said, well, you don't own the business anymore.
Right. But, go check your bank account.
Yeah, right. But you got millions of dollars in the bank. But it is finding that balance, and particularly for families.
So say that it is the value of the business is what is really driving them, and they've come to you, and you've consulted them on various aspects, and you've decided, okay, what we really want is top dollar. So let's just... We're getting near the end of our time, so let's go back and say, you know, what are some of the things that they need to think about when it comes to making sure that they are successful in driving the value to where they want it?
I'll jump in, Ed, on this, and really kind of we use this a lot in talking directly to customers and potential clients. Several factors I can point out. Maybe look at your revenue streams. What we use the phrase quality of revenue. I mean, is it concentrated within one group? Is it recurring in nature? Is it the kind of revenue that has good sustainability for the buyer to take over without much change? Look at your management team. How strong is your management team? You've got, you know, many people don't have a full management team. Look at concentration of relationships. Do you have too many suppliers that you're dependent on? Will the suppliers have to consent to the change of control transaction? That may be a difficult thing to do. And then maybe the last thing I'd see, and we typically see, is things related to the financial statements. Let's look at the quality of your financial statements. You know, the history is going to be a good predictor for future. Think of it as you're transferring ownership of your business to another party, and they want to take over that business, grow it, and someday maybe sell it themselves. So you've got to hand them something that's got good momentum, financial momentum going forward. And then maybe the final thing would be an absence of extraordinary events. Back to what we were talking earlier about the Gulf Coast restaurant. I mean, the Gulf Coast restaurants today have got legitimately an extraordinary event in their historical past. So if I'm 2 years from now selling a restaurant in, you know, in the panhandle of Florida, I'm going to say, well, guess what happened in 08 and 09?
Right.
And so you've got to explain that away.
Yep.
So that's probably the things I look at.
Anything you want to add to that, Ed?
I think management, and particularly from where we come involved with it, is again looking ahead, but trying to determine whether you plan on sticking around, whether the owner plans on sticking around. If not, if the owner's planning on moving to the beach and wants top dollar and is happy to get out, you know, that buyer, particularly a financial buyer, you know, somebody that's coming in to buy the business for the revenue and the income it can make, they're going to look heavily at that management team you have in place. And you need to make sure those folks are committed to it. They may want a little piece of the action in order to make sure they're working hard, but you need to look at that and plan for it.
Right. Well, gentlemen, it has become a tradition in the show here that when we get near the end of the discussion, that I often make a last request. So my last request is going to be, if you could offer one piece of advice, not five, one, for the listeners today, what would it be? Alan?
Aaron, this is going to sound self-serving, but it's going to be find an advisor. We've talked about a number of topics over this period of time. Anybody listening might be a little confused because I think what Ed and I have said a lot of is it could be or couldn't be. There's no cookie-cutter formula. Find an advisor to help you through this process. As I said early on, this is not putting your business up on eBay and taking a highest bid.
No, good advice. Ed?
I'll go back to plan ahead.
Planning.
It's the more time you can give to this process, you don't have to decide today that you're selling your business. You know eventually you're probably going to do it anyway. The longer you think about that and work with your advisors and talk about how we're setting up the business and what our long-term plan is, the better.
Good. That's great advice. Hey, Lee, do you have any advice?
Just listen to these guys. They seem pretty smart.
Well, I'd like to thank our guests, Alan McClure and Ed Brown, for joining us today. This has been a great discussion, and I am sure that those listening were able to take down a few good nuggets on how to appropriately position your business to sell it successfully. Should you have any further questions and want discussions with Alan or Ed, please visit www.resultsmatterradio.com, which is our website where you will be able to find their direct contact information. So thank you again to our guests and to my co-host Lee. On behalf of Burr & Foreman, we are a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. We would like to remind you that if results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, give us a call. You can visit our website at www.burr.com and find the right attorney for you. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.